Alone to the 20. Damien Harris to the house. Touchdown, Patriots.
What a night for the New England Patriots ground game. 46 rush attempts last night of 49 total plays. That's right. The New England Patriots threw the ball three times. They completed two passes and were still able to beat the Buffalo Bills 14-10 in some of the most outrageous weather conditions you will ever see in any sport. Let's welcome in Dave Festruck from the Toronto Star, who's covered a litany of great sporting events over the years. I'm sure there's been some inclement weather along the way. What's the craziest sporting event weather-wise you've covered over the course of your career, Dave?
That's a great question, fellas. Great to be with you this morning.
Thank you very much.
What's up, Dave?
What's up, Carlo? How are you? Well, first of all, let me just say, Carlo, you took a beating around this station when you were off for a couple days last week for the notion that you would not have been happy to be present at Orchard Park, New York last night to witness that game, even though you are a card-carrying member of the Bills Mafia, unless you were in a private box. And may I say, man, you're a wise man. Jeez. I am totally with you on that one. Like, I
may be,
some...
it's a good ahead. Old saying, Dave. I may be dumb, but I ain't stupid.
Exactly. Yeah, I really appreciate it. You're not a particularly old guy, but you're an old soul when it comes to knowing when you need to be indoors and when it's okay to be outdoors.
Exactly.
And let me say. What have I covered? Man, I remember the Pyeongchang Olympics, man, in recent memory, because my memory is terrible. I've been doing this a lot longer than a couple of years, but the Pyeongchang Olympics, man, that was like minus 40 Celsius at times. I remember being up on the ski slope, standing around waiting for the skiers to come down. And I did not have enough clothes on, and I had like every piece of clothing I brought to Korea was on my body at that moment. I had about four pairs of socks and a big pair of Sorel boots, and let me just say, nothing against the Sorel company, but my feet were absolutely icebergs. But yeah, I'm with you on that one, Carlo. The comfort of a private box last night would have been a very nice thing.
Look, if that game was in the middle of the day, fine, but. You know, the temperatures always drop at night. It's Buffalo. You anticipated what the weather's going to be. And look, I don't know how you feel, Dave, but I'm not a fan of watching a highly anticipated football game. Think about the two hyped games that we were, given the opportunity to watch this year. It was week four, New England versus Tampa Bay. It was the return of Brady to Foxborough. That game was ruined because of the weather. Last night, you know, the most hyped game in week 13 because it was the Bills versus the rival Patriots at home for first place, ruined because of the weather. I don't know how you feel, but I didn't enjoy watching that game last night, regardless of the result.
Yeah, I mean, like, last night is a absolute endorsement of why cold weather stadiums or cold weather cities need dome stadiums.
Yes,
right? Like, I totally agree with you. And you know, it was funny because I saw some of the Twitter conversation. There were people looking at some of those clips of video of the ESPN crew sitting on the field before the game, actually getting blown over, literally blown over on those high top chairs with Adam Schefter and the rest of the crew. And there were people saying, oh, it's football weather. I love it. It's football weather. And some of the wiser U.S. writers who hail from more, you know, reasonable cities, more reasonably clement cities in the States were saying, this is not football weather, guys. Like, this is a sport where the majority of the players come from Texas, Mississippi, California. They don't get weather like this in those places. That's like that's like saying, like, you know, it's like when people say, oh, it's a great day for hockey when it's 35 Celsius in Arizona. And those of us who hail from actual hockey country say, no, it's not. This is not. We don't play hockey when it's 35 Celsius. Sorry. Mm. But, I got a kick out of that. It's not football weather. And the thing about last night was it proved that Bill Belichick is the smartest guy in the room again because he figured out how to win the game. He figured out how to become the first NFL coach to throw the ball three times and win since 1968, guys. Like, nobody had done that since 1968 for a very good reason, because it's impossible to do. Yeah. But it didn't tell us whether the Bills are better than the Patriots. It didn't tell us whether the Patriots are better than the Bills in regular game conditions, and that was the shame of it.
I totally agree, and talk about the great equalizer. I mean, the CFL playoffs ongoing right now. We've seen countless games where the weather has completely altered the fortunes of one team versus the other, simply because when it's cold and windy and the field is slippery, it just balances everything out. And I think last night is a prime example. If you play that game in 25-degree weather in the middle of July, I think the Bills are a better team than New England is. But considering the circumstances of the ability for New England to run the ball and Buffalo being unable to throw it, that is a very interesting proposition for sure. I think for the Buffalo Bills did not work out nearly as well as it did for the Patriots. Dave Festruck from The Star is our guest. When you look at the AFC East right now, and, you know, the Bills are basically in control. I mean, the Patriots are basically in control with the Bills playing Tampa next Sunday afternoon, which should be an amazing game, Dave. But how do you evaluate these two teams going forward? Do you think the Patriots are rightfully considered the best team in the AFC right now?
I mean, you know, how many times do we have to see it before we, you know, before we're convinced that Bill Belichick is the genius of geniuses? You know, I was saying this yesterday with Mark Rowe on gameplay, like, how many times do we doubt these guys that are proven to be the leaders in their field? And I'm thinking about Bill Belichick. I'm thinking about Nick Saban being an underdog with the Alabama Crimson Tide on the weekend. Somehow he convinced the world that the Crimson Tide were 6.5-point underdogs to Georgia. And then what do you know? Alabama blew the doors off of Georgia. Like, who is surprised by that? Who that's looking at sort of the greater historical arc of these guys' careers? And, of course, Belichick and Saban have crossed paths. They're friends. Saban kind of fell off the Bill Belichick coaching tree. I mean, it's just incredible how much coaching matters in the NFL. And I think that's the question you have to ask yourself if you're a Buffalo Bills fan, Carlo, is Sean McDermott psyched out now? Like, is he so psyched out by Bill Belichick in this season when, you know, they thought they'd slayed the demon last year when they won the AFC East for the first time in eons and the Patriots had a down year. But now, what do you know? The evil genius is back, living rent-free in the proverbial head of Sean McDermott. And I'm wondering, like, I think that's the factor here. I think Bills have the better talent. They've got the better quarterback. They may have, you know, the better personnel en masse. But I don't think there's any doubt who's got the better mastermind. And that concerns me if I'm a Bills fan.
Well, it's like when you're talking about people that are champions, you're the champion until somebody dethrones you, right? And for Bill Belichick, you're the best until somebody takes over. And clearly, no one has been able to do that and show any differently. This guy continues to find ways to win. And, you know, it sucks to talk about as a Bills fan, but it's the reality of it. And there's nothing we can really do about it. He showed last night why he's still should be considered one of the best. To pivot here to hockey, Dave, and Maple Leafs, what did you make about the news coming out yesterday about both Jason Spezza having an in-person hearing for his hit on Pionk and the suspension granted to Pionk for his knee-on-knee on Rasmus Sandin, who, as reported yesterday by TSN insider Chris Johnson, will be out 2 to 3 weeks?
Well, it burns you up if you're a Leaf fan, and I understand. Like, I'm not a fan. I don't have a rooting interest in this. But as somebody who likes to see the right thing done, like, if you're a Leaf fan, you totally understand why Jason Spezza did what he did, even if you can't justify what Jason Spezza did, right? Like, there's no justifying going after a guy like that, especially the way it turned out with Jason Spezza's knee, you know, giving a jolt to Neil Pionk's head. You can't look at that play and say, oh, that's the way hockey should be. That kind of vigilante justice can't be allowed. And I think Jason Spezza is going to get a pretty lengthy suspension. I would guess he's going to get double what Pionk got. I would guess 4 games if I had to guess right now. And that. Just on the face of those two fouls, that makes sense to me. What doesn't make sense is how the game got to that point and why Jason Spezza at age 38 felt like, well, in this league, in my workplace, the only way to make up for Neil Pionk taking out our young stud defenseman Rasmus Sandin the only way that there's vengeance will be exacted or justice will be served is if I go after Pionk. And we know why that is, because the referees didn't do their job in that game. They allowed that game to devolve into what Austin Matthews rightly called a gong show. You know, Mary Lemieux had his Garage League moment. Austin Matthews had his gong show moment two nights ago in Winnipeg. And I understand why Matthews was frustrated, because he's getting ragdolled like he's a fourth liner by Pierre-Luc Dubois, and somehow he gets a penalty, and this coincidental minor's handed out, which leads to the 4-on-4, which leads to the Pionk hit, which leads to Spezza's retaliation, which leads to a bunch of other nonsense. If the referees would have just done their job, given Dubois an extra minor, given the Maple Leafs the power play, which clearly Matthews was going for, like, you're playing against a team with a 31st of 32 teams penalty kill. They're the 31st ranked penalty kill in Winnipeg. If you're Austin Matthews, you're doing the smart thing by taking that wrestling, you know, nonsense from Dubois. You're waiting to get on the power play against the Winnipeg Jets, where you're most likely going to score if you're Austin Matthews. He takes all that. Brad Meyer, the referee, is standing right there watching it go on way too long, as though he's some sort of, you know, amateur wrestling fan. Mm-hmm. And we got what we got. But, man, I totally understand why there's frustration in Leafland. And I'm not one to generally criticize officials. I generally defend officials. But the officials blew that game so badly, and we are where we are because of it.
Dave, so Spezza won't be in the lineup tonight. We're uncertain if Mitch Marner will make his return. He missed the last two games against Minnesota and Winnipeg. And I think Carlo brought up a really interesting idea of Josh Hosang being called up tonight if Marner does indeed miss. How do you think that idea could play out?
I love it. I mean, like Carlo, I'm somebody who's a big Josh Hosang fan. I think there's a lot of people in Toronto who've watched that young man grow up as a phenom in minor hockey, who played alongside Connor McDavid on that incredible Toronto Marlies team. We've watched, you know, the professional travails of Josh Hosang, you know, the run-ins with Lou Lamoriello and the New York Islanders, and all the mistakes he's made, undoubtedly. But it doesn't change the fact that he's an incredible talent who I'd love to see get more opportunity at the top level. And it looks like, you know, judging from what you look at with his work with the Toronto Marlies, it looks as though he's playing really well. I think, what does he have, 3 goals and 5 points in that 4-game stretch recently? He's been lighting it up down there. And look, it's going to be tough for him, I think. In a league where coaches have so little tolerance for coloring outside the lines, so to speak, especially this Maple Leafs team, now that they've become a largely, you know, Winnipeg's game aside, a very defensively responsible juggernaut of a team that it's in the top, you know, I think they're second right now in goals against per game. It's going to be tough to jump on that moving train if you're Josh Hosang, where each one of your puck decisions is going to be scrutinized, you know, incredibly by some of the best coaches in the world. I don't love his chances of hanging around, but I'm with Carlo. I'd love to see him get the chance.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think people are saying, I just tweeted it out, people are saying he needs to sign a contract first to do that. And, I mean, that's not hard to do. If the guy's warrants a chance to get called up, it's a simple signature that signs him a two-way deal, and he can find a way to get up. But, look, it's adversity that the Maple Leafs are dealing with right now. You know, no Rasmus Sandin. You're going to have Dermott and Nylegren, you know, fill out that that sixth defenseman pairing, and you got, you know, decisions looming with Marner and Spezza. I think this is, you know, you talk about this, the early part of the season that the Maple Leafs have had. I mean, so far a success story. They banked a lot of points, but does the depth of this team start to concern you?
I was just thinking about that question. I think the storyline to me, Carla, that got overshadowed by all the extracurricular nonsense in Winnipeg was the fact that game gave us a pretty unflattering look at Toronto's defense core, starting with the fact that as the game began, Sheldon Keefe demoted Justin Hall to the third pairing. And I'm wondering, you know, we were talking about this. I was talking about this with Jim Taddy on the post-game show. Like, you know, Justin Hall's had a really tough game in Minnesota. I think everybody had a tough game in Winnipeg when it came to the two-on-one fest that blew it open for the Winnipeg Jets in the second period of that game, where it wasn't just the Toronto defensemen who were culpable. It was the entire five-man unit skating in front of Joseph Woll that was culpable in allowing the Jets to just, you know, steam to the net unhindered. But that bothers me if I'm on the Maple Leafs coaching staff right now. We're just at a moment when I thought I had a defense core I could trust. Suddenly we're backsliding a little bit here, and Justin Hall would be the number one guy who hasn't performed to the level that this team has come to expect from him. So I think Riley Brody's fine, but the idea that they tried Muzzin Liljegren in that Winnipeg Jets game, I'm not sure that's anything that's going to stick. And then it was Sandin Hall on the bottom pair. Obviously now Travis Dermott will slide in there as Rasmus Sandin rehabs his knee injury. So yeah, there's the idea that, you know, the thing that kills me, Carlo, is the idea that it was being tossed around that they were going to trade a defenseman.
I don't know where that nonsense came from.
Well, I said it at the time, like I remember Mike Babcock, of all the things Mike Babcock said that resonates with me. Sometimes I remember Mike Babcock once saying you need 9 defensemen to get through a regular season and a playoff run with the way injuries happen in this league. Right now they got 7. And with
I don't even think they've got 7.
Well, they've got 6. They got 6.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So even with Sandin healthy, I mean, Liljegren was never an NHL defenseman until this year, right?
Exactly.
So,
And the question is, like, that's my question is, like, he wasn't an NHL defenseman until this year. I remember you being highly skeptical, Carlo, before the season of whether or not he'd be able to stick. And now you're saying he's a top 4 NHL defenseman, which is what they said in Winnipeg. I'm very dubious that that's going to work long term. As much as I like Timothy Liljegren, I've been saying, you know, from the beginning of the season that Sandin and Liljegren are really good as a third pair in sheltered situations where they don't have to do too much. They don't have to play against top competition. You start changing that situation, Carlo. I mean, I don't know. You've been in that situation. What does that do to a guy if you move him up from third pair of duty up into first or second pair of duty?
Well, it puts a lot of pressure on him, right? You're playing with different matchups. You know, you're exposing yourself to bigger minutes in different situations. And I guess this is their way of saying, well, look, he's looked good so far. Let's see how much more he can do for us right now while we can afford to do it. And, you know, find out what it is that we really have. And I mean, I think they got their answer real quick that maybe he's just not ready for that right now.
Yeah. And rightly so. I mean, I don't think anybody who's a neutral observer expected him to be ready. I don't think you can expect him to be ready. I mean, you know, it's the old saying, but you don't really know what you got in an NHL defenseman until, well, Randy Carlyle used to say 300 games, which seemed a little much for me, but I get that. I get the gist of what Randy Carlyle was always saying there. It's like you at least need a couple of seasons to know what you got in a guy. And the last thing you want to do is rush him into a role he can't handle. To me, that would skew the results of what you're trying to find out. And I think Liljegren and Sandin are both much better off if they're held back on the third pair. But the question now is, given the depth situation, is that even feasible?
Dave, should be an interesting day for the Leafs heading into a game against Columbus tonight. What the status, the length of the suspension will be for Jason Spezza, we'll find out this afternoon. We'll also find out if Mitch Marner will be in, and maybe, just maybe, we get a look at Josh Hosang tonight in his debut with the Leafs as a regular season player. Thank you for doing this, my man. We appreciate it.
Always fun, gentlemen. Have a great day.
You too, buddy.
All right. That is Dave Hestchuk from the Toronto Star. He's right. I mean, the defense, and we go back to that conversation about what they were trying to trade Dermott, trying to trade Hall. I mean, now I think you might be looking at, and listen, Sandin's only out 2 to 3 weeks, right? I mean, this is not a long, long-term issue. But I think as the playoffs approach, and listen, the salary cap's going to be an impediment to any type of decision that Kyle Dubas wants to make, but depth on D, pretty important aspect for Toronto, and I think that's something they'll be looking to address as we get closer to the trade deadline.
They have to.
Yeah,
they have
to. I don't think there's really much of a choice.
Look, you got 50 plus games left too. Can you sit here and feel comfortably saying, knowing what the schedule you're going to encounter, that Jake Muzzin is not going to get any bumps and bruises, Justin Hall's not going to get any bumps, and Morgan Riley, TJ Brody, like guys are going to suffer some bumps and bruises along the way, and I mean you've got to protect yourself. And I said at the beginning of the year, like, I was concerned about their depth on defense because it is a legitimate concern, when, especially when you have a guy that, you know, a young player that has been, that has looked so promising in all the games that he's played this year, now go down. And you hope it's 2 to 3 weeks and nothing longer, but you just don't know, right? We don't even know what it is that he's dealing with yet.
Exactly. So we'll talk to Cam Jansen, a longtime NHLer from the Cam and Strick podcast. He'll join us next about the Leafs, the situation with Winnipeg in the third period on Sunday night, what type of suspension we can expect Jason Spezza to receive, and a bunch of news around the NHL. I mean, a couple of coaching changes, including Vancouver and in Philadelphia. Cam Jansen on the way here on First Up.